And welcome to the Father's Day edition of Tasting Room Radio. I am a card-carrying father, so I get to be part of this show. It's wonderful. By the way, if you hear any noises in the room, there's a big old white golden English cream retriever behind me, completely zonked out, snoring her brains out. She had a big day. She got a bath. This is a compilation of three or four different interviews that we have done over the last couple of weeks. Part two of the BC Cider Festival is going to kick off the show, starting with one of the most fascinating interviews I've done in ages. The man's name is Bruce McKinley, and he is the ciderist at Valley Cider in Duncan, just over my shoulder. What a great mind is making these ciders, which explains why they're all talked about, why people talk about his ciders, because nobody's making cider like Bruce McKinley. And so we're going to start there. And the final interview from the BC Cider Festival 2023 is Jennifer Molgat. Some of you know her as the co-founder, co-owner of The View Winery, and she knows how to make cider. And she created a cider label called Ward's Cider because, of course, that's the family. They have been growing apples in the Okanagan for a long, long time. And that's the key. So Jennifer Molgat joins us. And then, The Ones. They are non-alcoholic Okanagan wines. The Ones. Two partners. Tyler Harleton, who's a really good winemaker, who had a label called TH Wines. And Chris Pagliuccini, his partner. They met at Dirty Laundry, if I'm not mistaken. We're going to have that conversation about non-alcoholic wines that seem to be growing in strength and on a big-time roll, and they are making beautiful wines. They make a Cab Franc that's fantastic, but they also have Bubble as well. We'll tell you about it. And then we finish with an interview that I discovered hiding behind a barrel. It's Master of Wine Joe Spillman, who is representing Justin Wines at the Vancouver Wine Festival. We're talking Paso Robles. Wonderful wines, wonderful growing territory. So, Master of Wine Joe Spillman finishes this show. Welcome, have a ball, and have a great Father's Day on Tasting Room Radio. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. To celebrate grilling season and all the great dads out there, consider joining them at the Unsworth Tasting Room on Father's Day weekend for a wine and ribs barbecue on the terrace from noon to four. Ticket includes paired flight of five wines, and a third rack of Chef Dan Bain's smoked ribs, smothered in red wine sauce and hot off the grill. Saturday, June 17, Sunday, June 18, noon to 4, on the patio. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. The 4th Annual BC Cider Festival, North Vancouver. Bruce McKinley is a ciderist, the Valley Cider Company, and is based, of course, just in my, it's in the Cowichan Valley.
Well, Duncan's in the Cowichan Valley. Cowichan Valley is a fascinating collection of misfit communities and like-minded people, and it's a pretty big region that has an extraordinary breadth of culinary tradition, and it seemed a no-brainer to have a cidery there for this reason.
What were you doing for a career before cider came along?
You mean what paid for Valley Cider?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, IT. I was in IT. I had a small network company, and basically that gave me a lifetime's worth of dealing with inanimate objects. The logical place to go is the other extreme and dealing with hundreds of billions of yeast cells, and that's what cider is. So I went from ultimate inanimate to the ultimate animate experience.
Here's what I first heard about you locally. He's making cider. What kind of cider? I can't possibly explain it. I can't explain how he thinks or what he does, but it's the most interesting journey. If you go searching for him, which is when I started my search, it ends up being North Vancouver, the pipe shop. Why cider?
I think cider has been the most misunderstood alcohol. It's also the bottom rung on the ladder as far as getting into the industry. And I have a few litmus tests in life that I think serve me very well. One is that if someone does something better than me, I don't do it. I have friends who make extraordinary wine. I have friends who make extraordinary beer. I'm good at both of those. Cider, I could not nor can I now find the ciders that I like. And I think the quality of cider has been a little myopic. And reading the traditions of what cider is it just grabbed me. And when I started to really monkey around with these conceptions of what cider has been and what I think it can be, I started getting excited to the point of blethering like an idiot. And my wife only wants to hear so much of that. So I thought, well, I need another audience because she's not going to listen forever. And so I had to start a cidery so that I could go tell other people so that she wouldn't leave me.
I believe that you have actually found your life's calling.
You know, I think so. I like to say that I find things that I'm not so keen on and try to fix them. And I like cider. I like it a lot. I think that cider can be something that gets me much more excited when it goes into realms that haven't been touched.
It's also a singular experience. It's you and your craft.
Yep.
But then you release it to us like a record, an album, or a movie, and you wait for the reaction. Or do you?
Absolutely. I don't make anything for anyone else but me. I think that as a small craft producer, I have a strong opinion of what craft is. I'm not making things so much as I'm crafting them. Making is just a collection of ingredients and recipes that you know will hit a certain market. Crafting is putting your heart in your sleeve and making things exclusively by your values, your beliefs, and your wants. Everything is made for me, and as a producer, I hope then that it's good enough that people are going to actually want and appreciate it. That seems to have borne out.
Bruce McKinley is a ciderist, the Valley Cider Company. I have an opinion after doing 17 years of wine interviews that if the person making the wine is fascinating or interesting or complex or challenging or whatever, imagine what the wines are going to taste like. So I knew that you would be an interesting interview subject and a human being. How different are your ciders from the rest of the room?
I think in some cases dramatically, because I think that cider has done a wonderful job, in fact unparalleled, in turning off the rest of the world. Beer, wine, spirits have traveled the globe and been accepted wherever they've touched. Cider, not so much, if ever. We talk about cider with this weird pedigree of history of maybe 300, 400, 500 years. Beer, wine, and spirits. Beer is like 5,000 years. Wine's 4,000. Spirits, 2,000. It just seems like the world's telling us they don't want this product in this incarnation. And when I look at when it has landed, what I found was actually going back to the original texts and books, it's very different from the magazine articles I've been reading. Cider is indelibly connected to the kitchen, not the tavern or the bar. It is a byproduct of agriculture. As such, it's been used to pay workers. It's been used to forge feasts. It's been used to show how much land you owned as a landowner. And its original incarnations, going back 400, 500, 600, 700 years, are as a blended product. People would chuck stuff in at arm's reach, whatever they had, so that they could make it last longer than water. I think cider is something that is meant to be monkeyed with. One of my friends locally, Mike at Emmendar Vineyards, makes natural wine. Low intervention, and he's very proud of that. He has a great time listening to me, at least, Mike, I hope you do, because I'm high intervention. I love nature. She's my partner in all of this, but I'm in control. And I think cider is a unique product in that if you treat it from a culinary perspective, you can do things with an apple in a fermented form, which are very unusual. I don't leave it. I have nice dry ciders, too, and heritage ciders, and things that you would find more recognizable. But I mean, the one that I brought along here is just, it just blew my mind after 3 years of monkeying around with controlled oxidation, co-fermenting with Grand Fir tips, and then blending it with toasted coconut that fell into my lap by accident by another, you know, culinary fan in the valley. It just speaks to me. And I think this is an example of why these ciders are different, because I don't see them as part of the tavern or the bar. I see them as part of the kitchen.
Bruce McKinley is a ciderist. The Valley Cider Company. And what did you bring to pour?
What did I bring for you? Oh, Tropic of Cowichan. It even has the little line going right through. And I'm hoping, you know, I do some of my names, I have to do surveys to people know what the heck I'm talking about. So Tropic of Cowichan is a co-ferment with a copious quantity of Grand Fir tips. When the yeast eat up the starch in the Grand Fir tips, they produce this beautiful, savory, toasted thyme characteristic, which I loved, but I knew it was really unique. And when I happened upon toasted coconut from a friend who was shutting down an ice cream operation that he tried to start, I just knew that the flavors would pair. I knew that they would work, and when I tried it, you know, it was one of those ciders that I was like, it's not for everybody, but I'm absolutely fascinated that it has been as popular as it is. It's been a huge seller for me.
The guy with the ice cream, was his name Ron?
Yeah. Yeah. So very unique. This is off dry. It's not fully dry because as with cooking, even a tiny bit of sweetness can actually bind acids together with the flavors, round things out better. But you'll never have anything like this anywhere. And I could say that about most of my ciders. I think it has such an interesting bouquet that just can't be replicated.
How big is the portfolio?
Oh, that's a good question. Last I counted, maybe 22, 23 ciders. Isn't that unique?
I just tasted that. There is a core right smack dab in the middle that I've never tasted in a cider before, which makes it quite unique. Is that the right temperature?
Sure.
Do you like it? Do you like your cider?
Depends. This one, yeah. This one a little colder. The Heritage ciders, I like a little warmer. Bone Dry, which is my lightest cider, almost more of a Prosecco than a cider, I like very cold. So yeah, this is about right.
Bruce McKinley, the Valley Cider Company. What are some of your titles again, some of the labels?
Oh, Love Potion, probably the biggest seller. Bone Dry. Oink. We won't go into Oink. That's controversial. Fuzzy Peach is another huge seller I brought with me here. Noir is blackberry, blueberry, and black cherries. You know, we've come up with things that I think engage people, not just from a taste perspective, but people like the names too. Fuego is my spicy cider. That's blackened serrano peppers, aged with charred rum barrels and applewood smoked hops. And it's got bite. It pairs beautifully with nachos. It's just insane. Things like that, I think, engage people. And when I put on the cans, I don't put tasting notes as much as I just put stories. This is what I was thinking. You know, because, yeah, you're going to taste what you're going to taste. You're probably more interested in what the heck I was thinking when I did it. So I chuck that on there.
Are you having fun?
Oh, I love this. You know, I get up in the morning, and I have the privilege and luxury to honestly say I love what I do. And my cidery is 50 feet from the house, and I spend my time there.
Thank you for bringing humor and grace, character, and chops to this cider business. I love this. I love the fact that we're almost neighbors.
Thank you for talking to me. I appreciate, you know what I appreciate? I appreciate when people express an interest. And it's nice to sell your ciders, but it's wonderful to know that you're on the right road to doing something when it could be easily construed as pretty weird.
And again, to the audience, the fans, the wine fans, beer fans, the cider fans out there, you can hear how interesting this man is. Imagine how interesting the ciders are when he gets his hands on them. Imagine that. Do you have a website?
I have a website.
Mr. IT Guy, do you have a website?
ValleyCider.com. .com. I should get a jingle for that. Yes, you can check out the ciders there. We do sell them on the website. If you want to hear the whole spiel, because seriously, my wife's sick of hearing me talk. I need to talk to somebody else. Come by the tasting room. We're open every Saturday afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. I appreciate it.
This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Unsworth Vineyards in the Cowichan Valley. To celebrate grilling season and all the great dads out there, consider joining them at the Unsworth Tasting Room on Father's Day weekend for a wine and ribs barbecue on the terrace from noon to four. Ticket includes paired flight of five wines and a third rack of Chef Dan Bain's smoked ribs smothered in red wine sauce and hot off the grill. Saturday, June 17, Sunday, June 18, noon to four on the patio. All the details at unsworthvineyards.com. The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor Vineyards in Osoyoos. Have you ever wanted to join a wine club? This may very well be the one. Five of their wines were made in small quantities and are available exclusively to wine club members. The Carmenere 2021, an Okanagan Carmenere. Contraband Syrah 2021. 2021 Eclipse, a sparkling Broussin Marsan blend. Petit Verdot 2021 and Tenat 2019. So many perks. You can find all the details at mooncursor.com.
We have come to our final interview, friends, at the 4th Annual BC Cider Festival, the Pipe Shop, foot of Lonsdale, North Vancouver. Yes, because I'm a North Vancouver guy who grew up here, and my dad worked in this room and was the game warden. I feel like I've come home to North Vancouver. I love North Vancouver, but it's completely changed to become quite something spectacular. The Sea Bus helped a lot, just because it brought those foot passengers along, and they're going by, and they're looking in the windows of the pipe shop thinking, who are these people, and why are they having a party on a Saturday afternoon? I'm going to talk to Jennifer Molgat, who's the president of Ward's Cider Company. Have you been into Ward's Wine Country Kitchen yet?
No, my goodness. Tell me about that. Why have I not?
Okay. Well, this will be interesting because Ward's Wine Country Kitchen is the new restaurant at the Wine District, the District Wine Village in South Oklahoma.
Working so much, I need to stop working and get out. Get out once in a while. I had no idea.
They just opened.
Okay.
Scott Ward.
Yes.
Is the guy who got it rolling. Front of house is Mindy Ward, our daughter, and they should be pouring Wards.
I wonder if we're related, probably somewhere along the line.
Well, it's Scott Ward. We're going to have a talk with that. But Ward's Wine Country Kitchen should be pouring Ward's apple cider.
I assure you, we're going to head down there and get it in there, I hope.
You go to Mindy and say, your dad sent me. Okay. I'll set this in motion. You can tell me quickly the shortened version of the lineage of how you came to be sitting in this chair. It was your great-granddad who started this.
So great-granddad Ward came from London, England in the early 1900s, dragged his poor wife from London, England to little old Kelowna, British Columbia, had five children, two of whom were boys, Arthur and Harry Ward. They took over the family business and orchard when my grandfather got too old to run the company anymore. And then later on, my father, Chris Turton, and his brother, Ted Turton, took over the property. They purchased it from my great uncles, and they ran it for quite a long time. In later years, my uncle decided to go off and do other things, and so then the family land was just in my father's name and under his management. And then in 2006, I got involved, and my father and I started a cidery and a winery. We are the View Winery and Ward Cider.
Tell me the vast difference between the cider business and the wine business.
Well, 10 years ago or 16 years ago when we started the winery, cider was not cool. It was not a thing. So it was very, very challenging. Whereas when I started the winery, we were just getting in at the time when there was a big surge of popularity in wine and BC wines in general. So cider was a tough go. And sometimes when I was selling our wines, I wouldn't even talk about the cider because I was afraid that it would compromise the perceived integrity of the quality of our wines. So it was a tough go at first.
And now,
with the craft brewing movement, the craft cider movement has just been huge. And so now we fly our cider flag high. We are the View Winery, and we're also Ward Cidery, and it's been really, really great.
I'm sure that you understand who your wine fan is. You see them all the time. You exchange. Who is the new cider fan?
The new cider fan generally are people that enjoy craft artisanal beverages. They appreciate farm crafted, locally grown. They are often have quite discerning tastes, and they appreciate the quality ciders that we see on the market nowadays. Cider is very much like wine. It's just made from apples.
Gender, female, men?
It used to be that we thought there was more females purchasing it, but honestly, we see about 50-50.
Age?
Younger and younger. You know, millennials, for sure. The millennials really appreciate that, the craft movement. And also, cider's probably a little bit more affordable. So I think for that younger crowd, it's a beverage of choice.
Jennifer Molgat, who's the president of Ward's Cider Company. How many different ciders are you making? Why is that portfolio?
So we have a very diverse portfolio. We have our traditional ciders, our traditional Ward's Apple, Ward's Ginger, and Ward's Orchard Rosé. And then to compete with the local ready-to-drink beverages that have really taken the cider and wine market and done quite a bit of damage, I'll be honest, probably about 30% market share over the last decade gone to the ready-to-drink beverages. So we decided to fight back a little bit. We got our fighting gloves on. So we actually make some cocktail ciders. So they're ciders that are infused by popular cocktails. We do a Negroni, a Mimosa, a gin and tonic, and this year new to us is the Pina Colada. I don't have it at the fest because it's still brewing right now. And then apart from that, soda beverages. We're really hard on the wine and cider industry, so we decided to take on the soda beverages. We've made a lower calorie, lower alcohol cider. It's tea infused, so we partnered with a local Chai Baba organic tea house, and we infuse tea into our ciders.
Well done. I like your fighting stance. You brought over the Orchard Rosé. The key word there, as much as I like Orchard, is rosé.
Yes.
Because we're a big rosé house.
Yes.
Night and day, 12 months a year. We don't put it away come of Thanksgiving.
I'm the same way. I absolutely love rosé. But, you know, lately I've been looking for something with a little bit lower alcohol. So I get a little bit more accomplished after dinner. So I often, instead of grabbing our Pinotage rosé or our Silver Lining rosé, I reach for our Orchard rosé. It's very wine-like. Our ciders are made by a winemaker. So same attention to detail, same fresh fruit forward notes. I would call it more of a modern style. We don't play with VA or any kind of microbial qualities. Our cider is very wine-like.
Do you want it for people who like rosé or just looking for a rosé alternative?
No, this is for people that like rosé. So it's apple cider, a blend of our European heirloom cider apples, and then we infuse blackcurrant, plum, beet juice, and a tiny bit of hibiscus, which gives it that lovely tart finish.
This is diabolical. This is diabolically good.
Right? So,
did you make a lot of it?
Yes, we did. And it's, oh my gosh, we can barely keep it on the shelves. And we're more and more restaurants now are purchasing it. And it's going out by the keg like crazy. See what I mean about that nice tartness on the finish? That hibiscus
it's
is just,
really cool.
Thank you.
Speaking of cool, what's the right, is this the room temperature? Is this the correct temperature for the rosé?
You know what, we serve it about the same as we would serve our rosé wine. So around, you know, 6 to 9 degrees. Not too cold because it's got great complexity. You don't want to hide that by serving it too cold.
What about those human beings who insist on pouring everything over a glass filled with ice?
You know what, each to their own. If that's what you want to do, that's okay, you know?
What if you're living with that person?
Well, they do they, and you do you.
Jennifer Molgat, who's the president of Ward's Cider Company. Well, this is fantastic. I love that. Tell me about you and putting a cider in a can or putting it in a bottle. What dictates that?
There's been a real movement in the craft brewing movement, and often cider sort of follows suit a bit. But the movement to the, especially to the tall cans, we find people not reaching for the bottles as much anymore. I don't know why that is. Maybe the cans are more convenient. So we're moving most of our production to cans, and it's been really well received. Cans and kegs.
What's your website?
We are wardscider.com, and if you're interested in our winery, we are theviewwinery.com.
This is a one-off. I'm going to edit this back in.
Okay.
Tell me what you're pouring over the table right now.
Yeah, so we brought three collections. We have our core brand Ward's Cider, our Ward's Orchard Rosé, which, Terry, you just tried. We have our Ward's Ginger Apple Cider, which is really dry and very food-worthy. We have our tea-infused ciders. Those are the ones that are a bit lower in calories, a little bit lower in alcohol for people looking for that. Very, very refreshing on a hot day. And then our cocktail ciders are super fun. They're inspired by cocktails. We make our own house-made gin and tonic tincture that we add to the cider for the mimosa. It's co-fermented with our Gewurztraminer grapes and then infused with fresh citrus peel.
Here's the last question. Is there room in the Okanagan Valley for two Ward families? Let's all just get along here. That's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Terry. Nice to see you today. Thanks for your support.
Jennifer Molgat, who's the president of Ward's Cider Company, 4th Annual BC Cider Festival. Sean and Kelly Pizio are my hosts. Okay, guys, I said that I would come back to you. How's the turnout? How's the buzz?
Oh, it's been great.
Lovely. We're selling some tickets at the door, I think, as well. So.
And the people have been great. Everybody seems to be in great spirits and super excited. So
it seems to be this is the kind of people that you want for your craft. You want people who are leaning in.
They're knowledgeable, and people are asking questions, and they're not here just to drink. They're here to learn and enjoy a product. So.
They're taking notes as well in our cider notebook there, so that's great to see.
If anybody in Victoria has an idea of where we could hold this festival, the great room, it's got to be a great room, and it has to be affordable, please get a hold of me or get a hold of the guys at BC Cider Fest. Well, good luck tonight, and thank you for doing this for cider.
Oh, thank you for putting a spotlight on it. That's great.
Yeah, and we couldn't do this without the cider makers' support and then just all the fans, people who enjoy cider, and yourself. Thanks for coming out and covering it for us.
What's your website?
bcciderfest.ca.
Thank you. thank you. Have a great 4th.
Thank you.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Moon Cursor Vineyards in Osoyoos. Have you ever wanted to join a wine club? This may very well be the one. 5 of their wines were made in small quantities and are available exclusively to wine club members. The Carmenere 2021, an Okanagan Carmenere. Contraband Syrah 2021. 2021 Eclipse, a sparkling Broussin Marsan blend, Petit Verdot 2021, and Tenat 2019. So many perks. You can find all the details at mooncursor.com. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Estate Winery on the Naramata Bench, one of the originals. They are thrilled to announce that their 2016 Mosaic recently received an outstanding 95 points from the one and only John Schreiner, Dean of Canadian Wine Writers. Mosaic is the perfect gift for Father's Day, made with 5 of the 6 varieties allowed in the Bordeaux region of France: Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, and Malbec. You can find all the details at hillsidewinery.ca. This is a Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're talking about The Ones, non-alcoholic Okanagan wines. Chris Pagliacchini has joined me. He and his partner, Tyler Harleton, have got the market's attention. The Ones. Where do you craft The Ones?
So we do that right here in Summerlin. So I was born and raised in Summerlin, and Tyler, my business partner, he moved to Summerlin. So we thought this is a great place to run a business here.
He had TH Wines. He had his own winery. Much to the amazement of those who followed him on the newsletters and the postings, he said, yeah, I think 2019 is going to be my last vintage. He did say, let it be known, that he was going to be a farmer and a grower. So is he now?
Always, yeah. He's got the passion for growing, so he's always growing lots of stuff.
He is a prairie boy, so yes, that would be expected.
Exactly.
And how did you jump into this business?
Well, I guess just to back up a little bit. So Tyler and I made wine before TH Wines at Dirty Laundry Vineyards. So it was about a dozen years ago. So we worked together there and we'd always remain friends. Tyler went off and obviously had great success with TH Wines. But then when he wound it down, he stopped drinking kind of near the same time.
Yep.
And he went looking for, you know, non-alc option, you know, on the market, and he couldn't find anything he liked.
No.
Too sweet, too, you know, whatever. So he came to me with this thing. He said, we should try and do this. Let's try and do it, you know, see what we can do. I know we can do it better. It was kind of, you know, a novel challenge that got me interested, and he drew me in to do this.
A couple of years ago, I went looking for, my wife said, you got to do a non-alcoholic special. I said, okay, let me go look. Who did we gather? We gathered Thompson and Scott, Naughty. And I had a chance to talk to Amanda Thompson, who set it in motion. And also, Oddbird from, I think, Sweden. I could be wrong. But they were getting their fruit from the Veneto and from Languedoc. They weren't fooling around. And so, if you're going to get fruit from Languedoc, you better not mistreat it, you know. People come looking for you. You had fruit from the Okanagan.
Yes.
You needed the process by which you could take the alcohol out and then reintroduce something, or leave 1% there, thus The Ones.
Yeah.
Did you have to make your own machinery, or were you able to buy into something?
You know, we were able to use some things that were available, you know, some machinery was available on the market for other purposes, but the challenge was to put these processes together in a, you know, assemble them in a way that made sense for us, that wasn't really readily available. So there are, like you mentioned, there are some big players in Europe and California that have, you know, huge commercial facilities that are built for just this purpose. But to do this on a small scale, like it's not that common. So we had to kind of innovate.
Did it seem daunting?
It's more of a challenge than anything. I don't think at any point we were, you know, thinking, oh, there's just no way we can do this. It was kind of just like, yeah, I think we can do this. Like it's not that difficult. There are people doing it. We could do it.
This is a Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're talking about The Ones, non-alcoholic Okanagan wines. Chris Pagliacchini has joined me. He and his partner, Tyler Harleton, have got the market's attention. Did you? There was an article in the New York Times not too long ago, actually March, about non-alcoholic wines. And the point was made that Canada was missing the boat.
Yes.
We had the fruit.
Yep.
We know what the process was. Why not? Where are you, right?
Exactly. And that was exactly what we found when we went out to, you know, look for the Canadian non-alc. It didn't exist. So we thought, well, let's do it ourselves. So there's this tremendous opportunity that we feel to do that. And that's why we jumped on it. And that's why we're doing it.
And, you know, how well do you know the non-alcoholic community
So we are, you know, we've made friends with Noni Non-Alc Beer in Vancouver. We made friends with those guys there. Great couple of guys in Vancouver. They're doing that. But the more we get into this, you know, there is this whole community that we're just kind of new to the party. So we're introducing ourselves and just trying to become familiar with everyone.
Some people don't want to drink alcohol. They're not comfortable with it. Some people like Meg Mull. She says, there's just times when I don't want to drink alcohol, but I want like something cold in my hand. And so that's, the bar is low, but the bar is high. You cannot lose the aspects of a great fruit just because you want a low alcohol. It has to taste something like we're going to drink a second and third and fourth time.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the goals that we foresee in the future, if we do our job right,
yeah.
If you were to go to a restaurant and you order a glass of, you know, Cabernet Sauvignon, maybe they would ask you, would you like the alcoholic version or the non-alc version? Because you still want the flavors, right? You still want the flavors. You want the experience. You want to pair with food. It's, you know, it's part of the experience. We just want to do that just without the alcohol. That's our goal.
What was the surprise along the way, Chris, that you weren't expecting? Where were the surprises?
You know, I think just of how big the demand was. Like, I think, you know, there were people like myself and Tyler that were curious in it. Like, you know, let's see what there is. But just the response and the pace and the demand, we never would have guessed that we've been this high.
What about first taste? When did you know you'd gotten into the ballpark?
We went through like hundreds of different, you know, trials batches, and so many of them were terrible, right? Yeah, exactly. You know, so when we started to taste, like, so when you smell or you taste and you could say, oh, okay, I can pick out that varietal. Like, this is a wine product. And be like, yeah, that's Okanagan Cab Franc. Like, I could smell that. I can identify it. It's not going to be the same, you know, glass of, you know, full alcohol Okanagan Cab Franc versus non-alcoholic. They're not identical. They're in two separate categories, but you want those, you know, those notes to come through.
We're talking about the ones, my friends, and he is Chris Pagliocchini. First of all, did Tyler have his access to his vineyards, or did he have to go seek new fruit?
We had to go find new fruit, because what we learned pretty quickly on is that, you know, the varietal, it matters in terms of when you're de-alkalizing, certain things will come out and certain things will not. So you have to find, you know, the right wine that will be expressed more beautifully in a non-alcoholic version.
This is a layman's thinking. Do you strip the alcohol out and then reintroduce it? And by taking the alcohol out, do you have to heat it and mistreat it?
So the answer to your second question is no. So we wanted to avoid, you know, and anything that was too rough on the wine, like you can really taste it in the end. So if you heat it, if you mistreat it like that, the consumer can taste it, you know, for sure. It'd be like, it tastes faulted. It tastes beat up. But when we do it, so our process is, you know, it's the exact same winemaking process. So you'd, you know, ferment the grapes, you would, you know, age in a barrel, tank, whatever you're going to do. Just the very last step before you bottle it, we're just filtering the alcohol out.
Okay. This is a Tasting Room Radio. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're talking about the ones, non-alcoholic Okanagan wines. Chris Pagliocchini has joined me. He and his partner, Tyler Haraldson, have got the market's attention. This is the sparkling red. I'm sorry, there's nothing in the bottle, but it was consumed rapidly. you have a new production online?
Yes, we do. We sure do. We still have two still red products, a Cabernet Franc and a Pinot Noir. And we have two sparkling products, the sparkling rosé and the sparkling red. Yeah, those are that there. And we've reduced the alcohol in the sparkling products to 0.5% just so we could sell it all across Canada.
0.5. So that's what you have to do? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the bar they want you to limbo under.
Exactly. Certain provinces, it's 1%. Certain provinces, it's 0.5. So we wanted to do 0.5. So it's the same all across the country.
Well, Chris, what's the price point on the sparkling rosé?
The sparkling are 25 and the still are 29.
We're talking about the ones, non-alcoholic Okanagan wines. Chris Pagliocchini has joined me. Pinot Noir.
Exactly.
It's a heartbreak grape, as you well know.
Absolutely.
How did it like the process?
You know, we felt that it was that particular batch, it was a big Pinot. So we thought that this is something that could tolerate it. And then when it came out the other side, it is, you know, as everyone knows, Pinot Noir, it's a lighter flavor wine for sure.
Yeah.
So we felt that you could still get those characteristics in it, even after it's been de-alkalized.
Okay. This was a hands down winner, flat out. No two ways about it. This run with this baby. This is the Cab Franc, the ones, and it's a beautiful, beautiful 1%, and retains what Cab Franc is. That's what I love about
it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Bang
that was
on.
It was a great batch. Great batch of grapes came from Okanagan Falls. It was phenomenal.
Cab Franc. Come on. Cab Franc wants to embrace you, wants to give you a wet hug.
Yeah, exactly.
When it's full. So you took away that alcohol and retained the flavor.
Yes.
Stunning. What's the price point on it?
So those are the still reds are $29.99.
Is there more coming?
So we have increased the production. So mainly for the summer, because it's kind of the season, we're big into the sparkling products. So the sparkling red and the sparkling rosé. We just did a run into cans. So we have each of those products available in cans, but we also have more bottles coming. And I think the improvements that we made to the 0.5% recipe, I think they're even better than the 1%. So the 1% is good, but the 0.5 is great.
And you're moving eastward across the country?
Exactly. Yeah. The demand is all across the country, so we're just going to follow that demand.
He is Chris Pagliocchini. He is one of two partners, along with Tyler Harleton, of The Ones, non-alcoholic Okanagan wines, beautifully made. Meg bought your wines in the Catherine Street Market in Victoria, which is a gorgeous market up in the hill. And she has actually went to them and said, bring these out, get them out here, show people that this is available. She's actually been doing the gospel.
Oh, perfect. We need to hire her.
She's been telling everybody about these wines.
Good news. That's awesome.
Which is why I'm putting in an order for a wedding we're going to be attending, because it's the perfect, it's perfect for the occasion. Oh yeah, I have a one-off question. Do you think you guys should be in wine competitions? Perhaps a subsection of non-alcohol?
I think it's something that's going to come. I really think it will. I don't know, because we talked about it. We thought, well, should we approach? Should we advocate for our group? So we haven't done that yet, but I think it's coming.
Okay. How do we find your wines? Where are they being sold?
So they're being sold at grocery stores, at cold beer and wine and liquor stores. So the best place to go is our website, drinkones.com, and for a full list of our retailers that we partner with.
Wonderful. Any surprises?
The cans were, the reception's been great. So those 250 ml cans, you could, take them to the beach, throw them in your backpack, go for a hike. Those have been, the response has been great. We've had a lot of requests to do some white. So white is on the docket. We want to get into that market. All right. Okay. Noted. Duly noted.
And any interest in cider?
You know, we've talked to some friends that do cider, and they've tried some non-alc. So at this point, we don't have plans to go into cider.
Okay.
But I definitely think that the non-alc sector is booming. So we've got beer, we've got wine. I think cider is probably going to be next.
Give them the website again.
Drinkones.com. DRINKONES.com.
Non-alcoholic Okanagan wines, my friends. Tyler Harleson is involved. And so you know that fruit's going to be good. Wherever it is, it's going to be good. Chris Pagliocchini, The Ones. Have yourself a fantastic summer.
Oh, thank you. You too.
All right.
Thanks for your time.
The segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by Hillside Estate Winery on the Naramata Bench, one of the originals. They are thrilled to announce that their 2016 Mosaic recently received an outstanding 95 points from the one and only John Schreiner, Dean of Canadian Wine Writers. Mosaic is the perfect gift for Father's Day. Made with 5 of the 6 varieties allowed in the Bordeaux region of France. Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cabernet Franc, Petit Verdot, and Malbec. You can find all the details at hillsidewinery.ca. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the Okanagan Wine Festivals. They invite you to join them for the Okanagan Spring Wine Festival Wine Flights and Local Bites until June the 25th. June the 17th, it's Pride in the Vines. at See You Later Ranch. And Father's Day, there's a tailgate barbecue at Phantom Creeks Estate. You can find all the details at thewinefestivals.com. My name is Terry David Mulligan. This is Tasting Room Radio. I find myself back in the Pipe Shop, foot of Lonsdale, North Vancouver, where the Cider Festival always happens, but this time it's a different pour entirely. It's California wines have come together, and the motif, well, we'll show you in the photos. And one of the people that I was hoping to talk to is right in front of me, Joe Spillman. He is here representing his friends at Justin and pouring at the table over there. Give me the bio, Joe, on your life to this point.
I've been with Justin about 15 years, but my history really starts in Chicago restaurants, where I started in the early 80s working in fine dining with a number of great chefs and restaurateurs.
Including
the most famous, Charlie Trotter. That was in the 90s, and that was a career arc that brought me into finer and finer wine and greater culinary consumers and an interest in fine dining that propelled me into interest in the quartermaster sommeliers.
There were some books along the way.
I was part of Charlie's writing team. I was the head writer for three of his books within the series of Charlie Trotter restaurant books.
Did you come from a wine family?
Not at all. The only time we had wine in my family was on Thanksgiving, and it was usually a magnum of Inglenook Naval Rosé, yes, or equivalent. Yeah.
You and I share the same experience.
Right.
My father was only drinking wine in a sack because he wanted the sack, not the wine.
Well, my dad drank more bourbon than anything else, and I like bourbon too, but, you know, wine became my main beverage.
Joe Spillman, master of wine, here with Justin Vineyards. Your history is colorful and should be its own book. The history of Justin is just as equally as colorful.
Right. So Justin Baldwin acquired the land in 1981 in far western Paso Robles that had never been planted to grapes. It was an oat farm in an agricultural community that raised cattle and horses, and there was a lot of nut farming at the time. And it was a pretty lazy, sleepy area that didn't have services like electricity or running water unless you dug your own well. So when he got started, it was pretty rustic. Up against the Santa Lucia Mountains, about 15 miles west of the town of Paso Robles, which itself was very sleepy in 1981, and probably was, you know, better known as one of the railroad stops between San Francisco and L.A., because it's about halfway between the two cities. And it has emerged as one of the leading growing areas in California just over these last 30, 40 years.
It took a while.
Yes, it did. Now, there's a history going back into the 19th century with grape growers planting a lot of all kinds of varieties. It actually goes earlier than that. We had the missionaries coming up from South America and Mexico planting mission vines in the 18th century. 19th century, then we had immigrants coming and planting Italian varieties and a lot of Zinfandel or variants. And so still a lot of old field blends there. But in the modern version of Paso Robles, since 1980 or so, it's been determined it's a Cabernet zone. Over half the production of the region is Cabernet Sauvignon.
What determines that?
A combination of things. There are some facets of the land that remind a lot of growers of Bordeaux, because there's a lot of limestone in the soil. Calcareous soils are very porous. And while it doesn't rain a lot in Paso Robles during the growing season, which is a good thing, there's lots of sunshine and lots of warmth. What water does come during the winter season seeps down into the soil and vines can find it.
Are we talking dry farming?
In many instances, in many parts of our properties, yes. When it gets too hot, we will drip irrigate here and there, but it's minimal. And frankly, there's a lot of times we really can't find water underground.
And how deep are those vines?
They grow way deeper than they grow up top. I mean, I suspect that some of them, now that they're close to 40 years old, are going down about 20 feet.
And they have their own character. They know who they are.
Well, there is a difference from vine to vine. And I think that's what's fascinating about a population of vines in a space, is that they do take on individual characteristics. And I think we've promoted that by growing in different regimens, in different planting times. You know, the early vines were widely spaced. It was advised, because it was a dry area, be wide enough for a tractor to go through. Make sure you have drip irrigation set up. And I think over time, as the vines have matured, they need less of that. And so as we've done replantings in some places, we've gotten a little denser. Still not nearly as dense as you see in Europe. But of course, as a warm zone that gets cool at night, we have some nice advantages there. We're just a slight bit warmer than, say, the Napa Valley floor on an average through the growing season. So, again, Cabernet drives it. It's very much at home in that kind of soil, but that's very different from Napa soil.
Joe Spellman, Master of Wine with Justin Vineyards. Joe, it begs the question, what are you pouring over there?
Well, we are pouring our Cabernet Sauvignon, our primary wine. And we also have Sauvignon Blanc, which has become a really important variety in the wine-consuming community over these last several years. Of course, we sommeliers always loved Loire Valley wines and certain white Bordeaux. And then we saw this emergence of New Zealand, a lot of Sauvignon Blanc. Well, California has done a great job with it for a long time, too. And our sourcing is largely in other parts of the Central Coast. There are some vineyards in Paso Robles that support Sauvignon Blanc, but a lot of our fruit is coming out of Monterey County, actually.
You know, with British Columbia, as it grew and has grown, just exploded,
sure.
They were growing one of everything, absolutely one of everything. And there was there's this dialogue going about, why don't we just focus on six? And so we get known by those six. Mm. But the variety, the width of what's being grown is what's making it very interesting. How about at Paso?
Well, we appreciate diversity as well. And I'd say there's something like 60 or 65 different varieties grown in pretty good quantities in Paso Robles. There are some dedicated to all 14 Rhone varieties that would be found in a Chateauneuf-du-Pape. There are some dedicated to all five or six Bordeaux varieties, depending how you count them, in their vineyards. And then there are Zinfandel field blends, which have a lot of varieties that you don't even know what they are sometimes. There's more white grapes than you think. There's interesting Viognier and Marsan. Again, Northern Rhone varieties. And there's still, you know, a fair amount of Italian varieties hovering around. And we've, for a long time, made a very good Tempranillo. It's a very good climate for Tempranillo, a great Spanish grape.
Carmenere,
I'm sure somebody's working with it. We are not, but Carmenere, I'm sure, is being worked with by a couple of grape growers. Absolutely.
Joe Spellman, Master of Wine, here with Justin Vineyards. I know that the wine fans have come back. We're thinking about the 2 years that we all went through, but they are back. Is there a new normal? What's the status?
New normal. Well, I think diversity, to your point, is very exciting for people. Trying new things is a new normal. I'd say other new normals are packaging diversity, seeing wines in cans, in kegs, in screw caps. It's
back
all normal.
To sacks.
It's all normal. Or bag and box, yeah. I mean, we don't do those things. We're pretty traditional. We're all in glass. All of our red wines are under cork. But our white and our rosé are under screw cap. We don't do keg wine, but, you know, there's a lot of things that have happened in the business that have brought more wine to more consumers, and restaurateurs like it that way, too. They like the opportunity to work with different avenues of delivery.
Are they going to have the problems with flooding?
Well, not this year. We did get a lot of rain. We like it. We're happy about that. The coastal areas, and we're only 10 miles from the ocean as the crow flies. That big refrigerator out there that happened this winter, at least, to bring a lot of rain was a good thing for our vineyards because they soak up all this water in the limestone soils deep, deep in the ground. We did not have flooding anywhere in our vineyards. There was a bit of flooding at the Salinas River, which doesn't happen all that often. It was worse for Monterey vegetable farmers, which are still actively growing vegetables through the winter, but not for dormant vines.
Last question, Joe, and that is, what kind of a customer is Canada?
Canada, I think growing. You know, I think, of course, we're neighbors. We have, we can do a lot of things in California that are challenging to grow in a place like British Columbia or Ontario, which are cooler climates overall, shorter seasons. On the other hand, I've seen maps saying, hey, the ideal growing place in the future might be British Columbia.
Who's saying that? Evan Goldstein.
I'm not surprised. And I've seen
he said it in Yosemite 20 years ago.
Yeah, I've seen it in weather tracking analyses for the next 30, 40, 50 years. Yes, it could be great up here. I always try BC wines when I'm here. and enjoyed one last night. But a good Cabernet Franc, let's say. And different from what we do in California, different from what you would find in Bordeaux or the Loire. So I think from the California perspective, we see a market of engaged consumers who like flavor, and I think that's what we deliver in a very positive way. And we also see much more of a sense of, would you maybe call it a Wanderlust? People are interested in the world around them and wines from it.
And because I lived 5 years in San Francisco, what they like is also the consistency. You know that a California wine is going to deliver.
We feel good about our prospects in Paso Robles being very consistent and techniques, managing all of our harvests. I mean, everything is hand-picked at our winery, hand-sorted. And then there's other processes that make sure only clean and properly ripe berries are going into the fermentation tanks. So that means consistency. A little technology is helpful, but there's no voodoo going on here. We're not adding chemicals, enzymes, anything like that. And so I think being properly ripe and fresh and consistent is a good sign for what we do. It wasn't so, you're right, 40 years ago, there was a lot of California wine that was really not so interesting and had too much sugar in it and wasn't consistent from year to year, and you had to be careful. And that's what spawned all these reviewers, you know?
And bless you, you have character and stories to tell, and you bring them.
Well, that's true. I think there is a romance about California and always has been. I mean, it's in the movies, it's in the history of mining, it's in the history of American expansion to the West, it's in the history of bringing in people from all cultures all over the world to cook and farm and make things and develop great technologies. And California is exciting as an entity unto itself, and I'm proud to be part of it.
Master of Wine, Joe Spellman, master of the world, frankly. He's here as a representative and a master storyteller for Justin. I will send you off and have a great night here.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
The storyteller from Paso Robles, Joe Spellman, here with Justin Vineyards. This segment of Tasting Room Radio is brought to you by the Okanagan Wine Festivals. They invite you to join them for the Okanagan Spring Wine Festival Wine Flights and Local Bites until June the 25th. June the 17th, it's Pride in the Vines at See You Later Ranch. And Father's Day, there's a tailgate barbecue at Phantom Creeks Estate. You can find all the details at thewinefestivals.com.